So you know, what if I'm sitting out there and I didn't raise my hand that I have signal, but I use WhatsApp and Meta says that's encrypted. I use messages that's encrypted. I use Telegraph. Like, am I not already protected? Like, what does signal do that's better than those?
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is the issue with quick, snappy marketing slogans promulgated by those with huge budgets. Yeah, you know, they do use encryption, but they use a drop of encryption in the lake of their technology, whereas, you know, our lake is encryption, right? If you want a metaphor. So WhatsApp licenses our core technology. Signal has built the gold standard for messaging encryption, and that's across the industry. WhatsApp licenses that. But if you picture a layer cake, they're one layer of the cake, and they use our encryption to protect the contents of your messages. So if I text, you know, if I text my team, hey, where are we meeting? WhatsApp won't have access to that. What they will have access to is when I texted my team, who my team members are, who's on the group thread that I texted to my team, what my location was, what my profile photo is, my contact list, all the rest of it, right? So that's really intimate information. Oftentimes, you know, that is, as Hayden said, we kill people based on metadata, right? Metadata is really important, and metadata is a fancy little term for all the rest of that information that isn't the content. And so it encrypts a small sliver, but it is not private in the way that Signal is. And Signal, you know, you think of that layer cake, we've gone through and we've made up new recipes to bake every layer in that cake so that we can do it privately, which, let me tell you, is really hard because the norm, the assumption, is you want to collect all the data. You pull, like, standard libraries off the shelf and you use them, you're going to be collecting data. You're going to be transferring data to a remote server. You're going to be, you know, doing exactly the things Signal will not, does not do. So we end up spending months and months and months on really simple things because we have to re-architect the fundamental premise of how things work in order to collect as close to no data as possible. So that's a key difference. Now, Telegram is a social media network that collects a huge amount of data and has encryption as a tiny smidge of an add-in on the side for DMs. So there's absolutely no comparison between Signal and Telegram. They are not private. They have a huge amount of data, and they are a social media platform, not a private interpersonal communications platform like Signal.
What's happening? My peoples, privacy freaks. So much going on. So much going on in the world. What do we do? Where do we turn? Where's our boy Michael Bazell when we need him? I feel like Michael Bazell is like our Superman. And society rejected him. They jettisoned him. We're just waiting for his return one day. For those that don't know who Michael Bazell is, probably the OG privacy podcaster. I would say top shelf. Top shelf. The Patron, the Don Julio, Silver. I don't know that many tequilas because I'm a bourbon drinker, but I'm trying to expand my horizons, okay? So that was Meredith Whitaker with Guy Kawasaki from the South by Southwest Conference that just happened a few weeks ago. Actually, I am playing catch up. But yeah, I think this was, what was the date? So the date this was posted was 3 weeks ago, but every year there's a big tech conference and it's South by Southwest. It's been going on for quite a long time, 15 years, maybe longer, in Austin, Texas. And that was a talk where Meredith Whitaker, the president of the Signal Foundation, was being interviewed by Guy Kawasaki from, he's, I think, like a director or executive at Canva, excuse me. And it was a sit-down conversation panel, and they were talking, you know, like, why would I use Signal? What are the differences between Signal and WhatsApp and other messengers? Why does it matter? And I think it's an interesting, it was an interesting conversation, and I'll have the YouTube link in the show notes so you can go listen to it. It's about an hour long, and I found it really interesting, entertaining. I think Meredith has a very charismatic way of talking about complex concepts in a very simple way. So if there's somebody out there you're trying to have a conversation with who is not understand the technical benefits of having end-to-end encrypted communications, it would be a great video to maybe pass over and have them take a look, because it's entertaining. It's not super techie. And I just really appreciated the way she answered the question about, you know, comparing Signal to WhatsApp or Telegram. Those are probably two most common normie platforms or applications that everyday person is at least either tried or they have heard of it. Probably WhatsApp, the most widely used. Of course, it's owned by Meta. It was purchased by Meta, which owns Facebook and Instagram. So there's always that to consider. So anyway, yeah, I thought that was kind of fun. I hope you're doing well. Today is Wednesday, April 2nd, 2025. And I really was hoping to get two podcasts out last month. That was my mission. That's my goal, is to get at least two out a month. And I failed, you guys. I totally failed. But I did have a very quick, unplanned family needed trip that was a couple of weeks long, and I forgot my podcast gear. And I did experiment with doing it from my phone, and I wasn't happy with the end result. So I just decided to wait until I returned home, where I could be in my dungeon in my lab and get back on the microphone. And during that time, of course, I'm taking notes, putting notes together. I'm doing research. I'm listening to podcasts, reading articles, hanging out on Noster and Mastodon, collecting informations, and, you know, things are developing. And of course, SignalGate happened. So I might touch on that. I know it's probably kind of an old story by now. So I kind of had some topics or ideas that I might discuss, might be a little freeform podcast episode style, within the context of AI and AI agents and what those are and what is needed for AI to actually be successful. Unless you're Apple, because Apple is probably never going to be successful implementing AI. It seems they have completely missed the mark. So I'll talk a little bit about AI, as well as some news that I think is interesting. One of them, which is why Switzerland might be a little at risk. It anonymous-based company protections. They're looking at making some changes there. It's not completed or finished or anything like that, but it's definitely in the news. And I thought that might be a topic of conversation, since a lot of the services that we all rely on often register their businesses in Switzerland for the privacy protection. So I might touch on that, as well as the discussion of like decentralization versus centralization, and what kind of impacts that can have, and also potential impacts to Tor, once again being targeted by ongoing node runners relay servers being stood up. Another topic I was going to just kind of maybe go a little bit into depth, if it's interesting enough for you to listen, is I think it was quite interesting. I was doing a bunch of research on the Apple WPS, which is the Wi-Fi positioning system. So I'm going to touch on that a little bit, and about how broad that network is, and really how probably there's not a whole lot we could do about it, other than changing or adding a tag on your SSID on your Wi-Fi, but how that system is being exploited. So, and the responsible disclosure from the researchers as well. So I might talk about SignalGate. I want to talk about a couple of new services that have come across my desk, if you know what I mean. One of them is called Cape, C-A-P-E. The website is cape.co. Another one is NIM, N-Y-M, or also known as NIM VPN. I recently listened to the Hated Ones interview with the I think the founder of NIM VPN. Kind of interesting. I don't really know what to think about these types of services. Also, he interviewed one of the founders of Session, and I haven't actually finished that interview. I'm about halfway through it. And I really enjoy the interviews with founders of these platforms because it gives me a Joe Rogan kind of moment where these people can talk for long periods of time. And I feel like I can discern if they're full of crap. Sorry, I know some kids listen to this. I might be dropping a few swears here and there on this episode. Not intentionally, but if your kids are in the car, just, you know, let them know these are just, you know, big people words. So yeah, Session founder, also the founder of NIM VPN, kind of maybe touch on these. I'm thinking about experimenting with them, maybe in safe environments where I can try to see if this is legit or not before I'd ever even talk about it as something you would want to incorporate potentially into your own workflow. Because I get that glowy sus, for those that don't know, glowies are usually plants by the CIA or some sort of Fed. I get these glowy vibes that if you listened to one of my previous episodes where I talked about Anom for the, not for me, about the FBI running the Anom phone network, I get that same feeling for this Cape service. And I might just touch on that. Now, I'm not accusing them. It's just very fishy. And so the reason I want to talk about these things is because I want your spidey senses to pop off when things come across your desk and you're like, oh, hey, here's this new like anonymous service I can use. I just need to download this app and give them, you know, some KYC information and then I can be hidden and anonymous. Because if you're using a phone, you're probably not anonymous. And we'll kind of maybe talk a little bit about that as whereas possibly getting into some hot water in the Italian government with some spyware scandal action going on over there. Tuta Mail sees 148% paid user growth, which is insane. Molvad VPN coming out with their DIATA version 2, which is now available on all platforms. Basically what that component is, what that feature is it adds filter and noise to the web traffic. So if your ISP is monitoring your web traffic and they're looking for delays or they're looking at packet sizes, this basically scrambles that. So it makes it much harder to track patterns of what sites and what services or protocols you're using because it's filling in gaps with extra noise. So might talk about that if we can get to all of those things. Hopefully that sounds of interest to you. If it does, thanks. Stick around for this awesome episode 44. Thanks for hanging out with me. And the title of this one is Signal Me, Bro. Signal Me, Bro. Because if you haven't heard about the SignalGate situation in the United States recently with the attack on the Houthis in Yemen, where the Signal group chat at the highest echelon of our defense accidentally or maybe not accidentally, either way, added the a journalist from the Atlantic to the Signal group chat. Like, yeah, Signal Me, Bro, like hop on in and take a look at our war plans. So I thought that'd be kind of entertaining, a little poke fun at that situation. So yeah, that's the whole rundown. I'm going to give a quick shout out because we have some new Patreon members, Patreon supporters. So this show is sponsored by you all, everyone listening to this, whether you're contributing or not, a lot are through, giving information or supporting infrastructure or donating money and all these different things. You are the producers of the show. I do it because you do it. I do what you do, kind of a thing. And so I don't ever plan, or unless somebody held a gun to my head, I don't know, unless it's something unusual, like I might take a sponsorship for some like peanuts or something, but, or beef jerky, you know, cause I mean that, I don't think that really influence anyone's privacy decisions, but you know, we're kind of an ad free system here, ad free show. So I always give a shout out to our supporters. So I'm going to run through that real quick. The privacy badass here on Patreon, we got Michael Bates, AKA B-Man, Richard G, Daniel J. Martin, TK, David, Mr. Milk Mustache, Hutch, and CC coming at the privacy advocate levels. Thank you all very, very much. Y'all know who you are, and the appreciation goes deeper than you can imagine. I would give you all a big fat kiss if you were in the room. So top lightning boosters, I want to also give a shout out to them. Bon, 35,000 sats, yo, what's up? I appreciate your comments on the 2.0 podcast app flow fountain, reading your comments. Wartime coming in at 666. Don 14D, I guess. Don 14D. These are all public, by the way. I'm not just like doxing people. These are publicly on the blockchain. So 500 sats and Nico, 200 sats. Thank you guys. Thank you all very much. I want to also give my hats off to our moderators on Intelligence 7 and Mattis Max, holding it down in the Matrix chat, as well as all of our forum and everywhere else we're posting. We're in a lot of different places right now. What do we have right now in the Matrix? 340 people, 340 souls hanging out in the Matrix troll room. Appreciate all of the conversations and help people are throwing back and forth there. We also have an off-topic channel, 177 homies hanging out there, trading off the dank memes back and forth. Always a good time. If you want to get connected with some privacy nerds, some possibly like-minded weirdos, anarchists, libertarians, left-wing, right-wing, all the people, we're all usually hanging out. In Matrix, we also have a SimpleX group chat. We also have a Signal group chat, which is kind of light. It's kind of more of an experimental thing. We're always messing around with things because sometimes it's hard to know if something's going to work out for you and whether or not you should try to convince your best friends and family members to switch to SimpleX or Signal or, I don't know, Matrix, anything. We like to try it out ourselves and see if it's something that we might, you know, could move to down the road. If any of that is interest to you, you can head over to closednetwork.io. That's the main hub for links to get to everything, as well as our forum and our Mastodon server as well. If you're on Mastodon, you can follow us. We're federated, so the links to follow me and some of the other people are in the show notes as well. So Noster is also kind of where I'm hanging out. It's a good time. And yes, I still plan to make some YouTube videos. I've just been incredibly busy or away from home, but I do have some ideas to make some content, mostly for entertainment value and maybe attract some people and individuals who aren't really there yet. They don't really know what they don't know. And sometimes it's easier to go to the local pub where everyone's hanging out rather than the private bar, you know what I'm saying? The speakeasy, if you will, which I kind of consider our community to be. We're a tight community. We're a vocal community, but we kind of are already been not converted, I guess awoken to what tech companies are trying to do and governments are trying to do. And so we're kind of an echo chamber. So that's why other platforms are kind of a good idea to explore and put content on to at least, you know, evangelize the cause, if you will, if that makes any sense. So anyways, I want to talk about AI agents and a few device assistants, because I think that these things are happening so quickly and a lot of us have friends or family who probably just have a regular phone, right? An iPhone or an Android phone where they're running a stock operating system, whether it's from Samsung or Google Pixel, like Android or an iOS device, if it's an iPhone. And one of the things I kind of wanted to talk about, because this was brought to my attention that I haven't really mentioned this, is that by default, in order to start scraping and collecting as much information as possible to make the assistance for these devices actually usable, which, you know, that's kind of I don't know, up in the air right now, depending upon what platform you are on, but they need access to all your information in order to have context. So if you ask your device to do something, it knows how to do it, or at least what you're where to look to get the information to provide you the answer. So by default, the AI on iPhones, what they call Apple Intelligence, is on by default. And by default, it has selected all apps to learn from, air quotes, learn from. And you might be thinking like, well, I don't really care. I don't use an iPhone. I use Graphene OS. Okay, true. But are you conversing with anyone who's on an iPhone? Because if you are, those conversations, even though they're end-to-end encrypted, Apple Intelligence on the other end of the device could be monitoring the conversation. And this is where we get into like the complete and shitification of technology. Because no matter what you do and how careful you are, all it takes is some, you know, jamoke out there to upload their entire contact list to TikTok because it says, hey, would you like us to find your friends? And there goes your name and phone number. And though you would never set up an account on TikTok or Instagram or whatever because you're holding your cards close to your chest, right? Your information, your personal information. Somebody out there, one of your contacts, it could even be a contact from years ago if you haven't changed your number, downloads LinkedIn, downloads any app, and the app says, would you like us to see if any of your friends, you know, any of your contacts are on here? And they're like, okay. And what they end up essentially doing is uploading their entire phone book from their phone, which has your information in there. So that's one kind of vector where these platforms are getting your information even if you never register an account. Your phone number is basically like a primary key. It is a unique number that can only be utilized for one person or business. So, you know, we don't have multiple people out there with the same phone number. That wouldn't work. So it gives them some kind of definitive information, at least about one primary point of association, right? So they can also see if other users who have your phone number also in their contacts using that platform to, if it matches, to correlate, start creating a shadow profile, if you will. Well, okay, we're kind of familiar with that concept, but now we're talking about content potentially. So though we just listened to Meredith Whitaker from Signal Foundation at the beginning clip of this episode talk about, you know, the lengths they go through and the layers of encryption that they use and encrypting as much metadata as possible, including obviously the content. Obviously, that would, you know, without that, what's the point of using the app? So what does that mean, though, if AI is scanning or learning from your applications? It's basically has like a root level access to look at all the apps. By default, it's on for everything. So this is an area that I've been thinking about and going like, man, you got to be real careful who you're sharing those Hegseth memes with. You know what I'm saying? Because you never know. Is Apple Intelligence, is Google Gemini looking at that, tagging it, categorizing it, creating, you know, some sort of cohort around, you know, content types? I don't know. How would we know? None of this is all black box technology. And if you know anyone with an iPhone that is newer, like a 15 or a 16 that has Apple Intelligence running on it, by default, it turns itself on with the iOS 18.3 or 4 update. I think it was 0.3. Turns it on by default. And it was like an opt-in thing, I think, with the previous version. And now it's just vanilla, baby. It's just part of it's on. So you go to your settings and you go into Apple Intelligence. You scroll to the bottom. You go apps. Start clicking on any and you'll see the toggle switch is on for learn from this app for every single app, including WhatsApp, including all, including Elements, including whatever. Whatever app you have running. And see the slippery slope to where we got here. You know, for the last few years, however long you've been listening, or if you've been listening to other podcasters or YouTubers within the privacy and security space, you've heard this kind of ad nauseum, you know, just like how these things change so quickly and how you have to be kind of very vigilant about you know, who has the, what and what applications have access to what on your device. And this is why a lot of us kind of have been leaving the traditional technology platform, you know, Android and iOS and stuff, and moving to things like GrapheneOS or other types of de-Googled or de-Appled. I mean, there's no de-Appling. It's just really de-Googling. Phone mobile operating systems. Because the phone is definitely the most widely used personal computer by most people, not all people, but most people on a daily basis. I work in digital media, right? I sit in a lot of meetings with clients and things like that. We're looking at things like response attribution from campaigns and different types of media that's invoking, you know, some kind of action, some sort of conversion that we're looking for. And, you know, one of the things that we glean is what are the platforms that people are consuming this content on? And I would tell you that between 88 and 93% of all of it's being consumed on a mobile device. I mean, we're talking, you know, huge. I don't think anyone's really surprised by that, though. When, you know, unless you're like retired or work from home and you have multiple computers on your desk, like I do, you probably are out and about and you're commuting and things like this, and you're on your phone. You're using your phone primarily for just about everything. And so that doesn't really, probably wouldn't surprise anyone to hear a statistic like that. So the reason why I mention that is because it's so important to all of us. And this is why, you know, when you think about a device like that, and the manufacturer can just push an update, and, you know, you're told, hey, when there's an update to install, go ahead and install it, because, hey, there's security updates and everything, and it's good, right, to be up to date on your software. So people just kind of always click update, install, they reboot, and they start using their device and not even think about what just happened. And I'm looking at this going like, this is massive. Why is there not news segments talking about this? Hey, by default, now Apple's, you know, crappy AI is on by default and has access to everything out of the box. And oftentimes, even when you make the change and you run a new update and it reboots, oftentimes it resets those things back to defaults. So the reason why a lot of us have been migrating from Windows to Linux, or iPhone or stock Android to something like GrapheneOS or CalyxOS or LineageOS or Yodi or any number of de-Googled ROMs, it's because it gives you more granular control over what it's doing. And it's not making decisions blindly without your permission, or at least your even wherewithal, not even your permission, right? It just doesn't even tell you. It's just doing it. And so this is just something that, you know, I'm always like, okay. Not only do you have to try to convince your your peoples to get on Signal instead of talking on SMS or iMessage or something like that, but now you also have to tell them, like, oh, hey, and another thing, can you go in Apple Intelligence and go to your apps and, you know, hey, just turn off Apple Intelligence. Well, I like my Genmoji. I like blah, blah, blah. Okay, fine, but go turn off Learn from this app on Signal so it's not looking at all your conversations. Like, this is what I'm talking about. The enshittification, right? It's where things are just pushed out to try to make you add this value to your life, and all it does is just turn you into more of a valuable data point. Anyone who's listened for a long time knows that I like Garmin devices. I'm a big, you know, Garmin user because I use it for tracking my health, my metrics, right? I'm a runner. I mountain bike. I'm primarily running is my main thing that I need to track. And then second to that is mountain biking, and then walks and my sleep and things of that nature, my resting heart rate, my HRV, different metrics that I use in my training plan. It determines what kinds of activities I'm going to be doing for the week, whether it's functional training and so on and so forth. Well, now even Garmin is going to be rolling out their Connect Plus at $8 a month. These features that I've enjoyed and new features that they're going to come out with will all be behind a paywall, And on top of that, it's going to utilize their AI to give you stats and information. And it's just absolute crapware. All of it is just pure junk. Will it be good one day? I don't know. I don't care. And here's the thing that irritates me about that. It's none of it is good yet. None of it. It really isn't. None of it. It completely sucks. Siri has gotten worse. I have an iPhone 16 Pro Max for my work device. I use it in a very contained environment for work, but I like to be up and on what's going on. I like to see what the hell all the hoopla is about. I turned it on. I turned it on. I know what it's going to go for, and I'm like trying this stuff out, and it's just absolutely atrocious. It's just terrible. And Apple has now come out saying that they're going to miss their marks for releasing their Siri update with Apple Intelligence, and all their Apple Intelligence really is some really lame ass summaries, which make no sense, and also incorporating ChatGPT. Because, like, yeah, that's really intelligent. My point is that this AI stuff has been rushed out, incorporated into everything to create this artificial value for consumers that consumers buy into. And it's not even good. And it also then is just allows the users to have their data used for their models while they pay for it, which is insane to me. I watched a YouTube reviewer on their 1 week of using Connect Plus, and their AI summaries were just so bad. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, so I'm going to pay you $7 a month to give you free data to train your models. I'm going to pay you to train your model, and you're going to give me junk in return. Why would I do that? I'm not trying to be anti-AI, anti-technology. I'm actually quite the opposite. I'm very pro-technology. I've always been a technology enthusiast. And there are some things about LLMs that I enjoy that I think are kind of cool. But it's not at this scale cool. It's not. And it's just, now I can't, it seems like no matter where I turn, AI is everything. And it's like, it's so bad. It just sucks. So I will stop ranting about that. And I just wanted to really raise that flag, that alarm, because I feel like it's really important. Probably the most important of anything I'll talk about in this episode. So if you got this far and you have to take off, like totally take that away and just say, hey, I need to be aware that conversations I'm having with people could be being recorded, even if you are using end-to-end encrypted applications. Yeah. How about that? You know, I should install SimpleX. Well, I probably won't. I should install SimpleX. I don't know if it can get that because SimpleX writes to its own encrypted database internally. But I guess if it's learning like on screen, it could even look at like things like SimpleX communications, possibly Briar. If you're one of the, you know, using Briar or something. So even Session. I don't think anything's really immune to it because it's basically a client-side scanning feature. So as long as you've given access to it, and it has by default, then I don't see how how the application developers can stop that from happening from their side. I don't think there's anything they can do. I could be wrong. I'm not an iOS developer or an Android developer, but from what I have seen, it looks like it's really important to make sure you have control over your device. This might be the year you should really consider dumping your primary technology if it's a proprietary ecosystem and switching to something that's open and more controllable for yourself, because it's just getting worse. It's just getting worse. Windows can't get away from it. End of life Windows 10, right? The end of 2025. So there's a big push for Microsoft to get everyone on Windows 11, which has its whole slew of surveillance baked into it between Copilot, AI, Windows Recall, just all the ad tracking and ad analysis that's being put into the platform. And all companies are doing this, right? I'm not saying one's more evil or better than the other. They're all crap at this point, all of them. Apple, junk. Microsoft, junk. Google, junk. It's all junk. And you know, for a long time, you could kind of say, well, if I had to use one or the other, I might go this way or I might go that way. But now I feel like you're boned no matter what you go. If you go with a closed source proprietary tech route. I mean, really, I have become that guy who's like, if you're not using just pure Linux and or BSD, because I know there's some BSD peeps out there. Big shout out. What's up, all three of you? A de-Googled phone and or multiple devices and put them in Faraday bags. It's like, I mean, it's like we've become crazy people, not because we're actually crazy, but we care. We care so much about our data is ours. It belongs to us. Our conversation should be ephemeral, you know, unless we publicly post it online. And so now we're kind of caught in this situation where the decisions are being made for you, and it's really hard to opt out of it. And even if you opt out, it's constantly secretly trying to turn itself back on. So, you know, we'll see. There are some companies that, I mean, obviously I mentioned NimVPN and Cape that are also like trying to get your attention, and I want you to be careful about jumping into any new technology that you haven't done any research on yet. Wait for people to vet it. I mean, you can do it yourself, but do it in an environment that's not on your personal device, right? Because I feel like there's, you know, a lot of like grifters in this space. I'm not going to name names, but probably know what I mean, who are trying to scare people. And it's like, hey, I'm going to scare you. You know, Skynet, you know, and everything's scanning on you. So buy my product. Buy my product. And I'm telling you, be cautious. Take your time. Do your research. Ask hard questions. Ask questions. And try to get, you know, some feedback from other people in forums or group chats or anywhere you can go, because chances are someone's probably got, you know, some experience with it. And in our group chat, we're constantly asking each other questions. Just today, we were talking about Flatpaks. For those that use Linux, Flatpaks are basically like containerized applications. It's a universal way to install an application. Doesn't matter what Linux distribution you're on. You could be on Arch. You could be on Ubuntu or Pop OS. Doesn't really matter. All of these systems, you can install the ability to install Flatpaks, which are basically just little images and generally run in a sandbox environment. We're talking about, hey, do you install Flatpaks for this or this and that and the other? And I think sometimes it's okay. I typically like to install from the source certain applications that are the most critical to me. My password manager, my Matrix chat client, Signal. I want to install directly from the source. I'm not going to install Flatpak. Will I install Flatpak for something like a music player? Probably. Yeah, sure. Will I install Flatpak for something like fonts or, you know, some app that's not really, it's not going to handle any critical communication? Sure. Yeah. Typically. I still look, though, and see if it's verified and stuff like that. So these are, you know, this is like an example of some conversations that we have. So if you were going to install a VPN, I would go install it from the project source. I don't know if I would trust an application developer to repackage it. Now, chances are, if it's a popular one, it's been vetted, it's probably fine. It's 99.99% probably okay. I don't like taking chances, though. So why would we blindly use these proprietary platforms for our communications, right? And I know that you don't get to choose for other people. You can only choose for yourself. So anyway, it's a conversation point that I thought, you know, was very important, and I've spent way too much time talking about it. I want to move into Apple's WPS. And what is WPS? This is their database, their Wi-Fi positioning system. And it's in a system that allows mobile devices to geolocate using nearby Wi-Fi access points or routers, right? And you don't have to even try to connect to it just by passing by, driving through someone's neighborhood, your office complex, someone's apartment. These iOS phones, iOS devices are basically operating like little beacons, essentially. So these devices, you know, they'll send the BSSID and the MAC address of a router and its GPS location to Apple, creating a essentially a global geolocation database. So if someone comes to your house and they have an iPhone and you go out of your way, right, to like, oh, I'm running pfSense or OpenSense or this or that, and, you know, I got all my shit VLANed out. I mean, dude, I'm on lockdown, you know. If you're broadcasting your Wi-Fi, it's in their database along with its location. So if you're also thinking you're slick using like, oh, I'm going to use, you know, some generic, I'm going to call it Linksys because everybody calls it Linksys. That way I won't be able to stand out in a database. Well, your geolocation is tagged to it. And so there's these researchers, this one particular guy, Eric Rye, who's a third year PhD student at University of Maryland, specializes in network security and privacy. And he gave a presentation at the Black Hat conference and just like a month ago, 6 weeks ago, on surveilling the masses with Wi-Fi positioning systems. So these Wi-Fi positioning systems are used, you know, by modern mobile operating systems to geolocate themselves without the use of GPS. So both Google and Apple, for instance, run Wi-Fi positioning systems for Android and iOS devices to obtain like their own location using nearby Wi-Fi access points as landmarks. So the way this would work is like, you know, they show Apple Wi-Fi positioning systems representing a global threat to, you know, privacy of hundreds of millions of people. When iOS devices, you know, need to geolocate themselves using nearby Wi-Fi, they transmit a list of hardware identifiers to Apple and receive the geolocation for the access points in return. So it's like using a triangulation system without actually even using GPS on the device, it can figure out where it's at. And that is freakishly like nuts. So to make matters worse, they kind of demonstrated like repeatedly querying their system because apparently they have no rate limit to these things. I think, did I take a note? Yeah, up to 400. Let's see. I was checking out my notes real quick because I thought I wrote down how many queries it could do. I guess I don't have it, but it says the Apple system is unique. When you ask for the BSS ID's location, it returns that location plus up to 400 nearby unrequested BSS IDs and their locations. That's what Apple's returning back to the device when it's returning a request. So that is like mind-boggling to me. That basically, you know, there is every single, I mean, think how many iOS and Android devices there are around you. I mean, unless you live out in the middle of nowhere on a farm somewhere, if you're in a populated area, it's going to be quite a lot. So what are the privacy implications from this? Well, it basically unintentionally allows unauthenticated, rate unlimited access to location data because you can actually query the system. So almost every Wi-Fi access point, even if you're not an Apple user, you know, is included, you know, to iPhone presence nearby. So there was like no way to opt out of this until this Eric Ryan, another guy, one of the other researchers, like actually did a responsible disclosure to the industry. And Apple was informed at the end of 2022. So December 22 and then March of 2023, Apple added an opt-out method where if you rename your SSID at the end, put an underscore NOMAP, N-O-M-A-P, that allegedly your router or Wi-Fi or BSS ID or whatever would be excluded from being put into this database. I mean, if it's already in there, it's probably too late. So if you get if you set up any new networks going forward, I mean, it wouldn't hurt to maybe put the underscore NOMAP in your SSID as an opt-out. It seems that only Apple's doing that. Doesn't really seem like anyone else cares. Also, there's, you know, at the router manufacturer's response, because, you know, they could maybe do something to mitigate that. I know like SpaceX Starlink is randomizing their BSS ID globally for privacy because they were actually using, I'll have a link too. I think on the GitHub, there is an Apple correlation experiments repository where you can go, anyone can go and actually use this data and find locations of routers. So they were actually mapping out Starlink locations in Ukraine and Russia and putting them on a map. I mean, what kind of crazy OPSEC is that, right? Where you could be basically pwned because you popped a Starlink on your tank? Dude, what the F, man? So, I mean, I'm just saying, like, this is another example of things where it's like, oh my gosh, are you telling me, like, I can't even keep my Wi-Fi in my house and the MAC address and the geolocation and the BSSID? I can't even keep that private. Like, it's already living in Apple or Google's, you know, WPS databases. Like, yep, 100%. So, I don't know. Also, GLINet, you know, their travel routers initially declined to respond to the responsible disclosure and industry response, but have later implemented a randomization after the press coverage that came out. And there was quite a bit of press coverage that did come out with this. I mean, it wasn't like massive, like front page New York Times, so there's a lot of tech coverage, a lot of tech news. So I found that kind of interesting. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, I have like more notes on this, and I don't want to like bore you to death. And I think you should go. I have the YouTube for the DEF CON presentation by Eric Rye from a month ago, or at least they posted it a month ago. I can't remember when DEF CON was. I think it was the end of January or something like that. But I mean, amazing. It was a great presentation. It's just a YouTube video. Just click it, check it out. If this kind of thing interests you, because he actually shows you slide decks where they were actually plotting out on maps all of the different locations for these BSSIDs using this GitHub Apple correlation experiments project. So I don't know. I might have to see if I can check that out. There's articles too. I posted one from the Register, Apple Wi-Fi positioning systems. There's an article that for reference. So if you want to go check that out, it's definitely it was intriguing. And you know, can we mitigate this? Probably not. Will the no map work? Maybe Apple will respect it. Will Google? Probably not. Will other services that are maybe collecting this, you know, Shodan and some of the other ones, like, probably not. I think that it's just kind of one of those things where it's like, these are the things we just have to accept in the world. Like 23andMe going bankrupt and selling everyone's data. Did you like that? Did you like that transition from Apple WPS database to 23andMe? Just absolute, like, yeah, I feel like, I don't want this to sound negative, but I was like, man, it's all bad news recently. It's just crazy. How much is going on and how much we find out about, and like, you know, whether it's the Salt Typhoon situation, like we don't even know if they're out. We don't even know if they're out of the system, you know, using the SS7 kind of backdoor exploit. Thank you, U.S. government, for that. You know, like, what do you do? Because we're in the chat. We have these conversations, you know, and there's all these services coming out. This one from CAPE, I'm going to talk about this because I think it's kind of relevant. I'm going to go to their website real quick. So pull up their website, CAPE.co, C-O. CAPE. Okay, let me read this as a marketer. CAPE is committed to your privacy and security. We don't collect your data and we'll never sell it. Talk, text, and live with the confidence that you are protected. Ooh, sounds good. Yeah, let me get on that. You get premium secure 5G and 4G coverage nationwide. Ooh, tell me what else. We ask less. Other mobile carriers collect your personal information unnecessarily, recruiting in privacy and data becoming compromised. CAPE, we ask less. Oh, sorry, resulting. Sorry, it's because I was squinting when I talk like this. Never sell your data. Unlike traditional carriers, CAPE doesn't collect your data and will never sell it. Well, how could you sell it if you don't collect it? That doesn't make any sense. Talk, text, and live with the confidence that you're protected. This is some bullshit AI-generated copy for this website. I mean, secure by design. Most telecom providers prioritize interoperability and revenue growth over security, continuing to rely on outdated protocols that leave users vulnerable to threats like SIM swaps and SS7-based surveillance. At CAPE, we're secure by design, ensuring that protecting your data isn't an afterthought. It's the foundation of our network. Well, if you don't collect your data, there's nothing to share. So that's a little contradicting right on their website. And they've got some just kind of very weird marketing going on. And there are big YouTube influencers talking about and pitching this. I'm talking one of them who's like 1.5 million subscribers, podcasts talking about it. And I don't know how much they're paying these people, but this screams FBI operation to me. First of all, and they, you know, and then at the bottom, this website doesn't use cookies because we mean it when we say we track less. Happy browsing. I mean, like, so it's $99 a month for the service. And basically, you can install it as like a SIM, I think, or an app. And it's supposed to allow you, if it were true, it could be kind of interesting where they say you can set up geofences that say like 10 miles, let's say a radius around an airport. And if you go into that geofence, the app will automatically change your IMEI and your IMSI. So your IMEI is a baked-in serial number, essentially, for the device. Every device has one unique IMEI. That's what most cell phone providers will ask you when activating a phone remotely. Like, if you say, hey, I want to activate this phone, throw out my plan. They say, cool, yeah, what's your IMEI number? You give it to them, and then they give you a phone number. They usually send you a QR code or something to scan, and boom, you've got an IMSI, which is your subscriber ID. They say they can change it, and you can change the IMEI to look like it's even a different brand of phone. So if you're rocking a Pixel, you can make it look like a Samsung or something like that. I don't really know how this works. I am very suspect about it, and I'm interested to learn more about it. Because if it's true, I kind of am interested, but I am really unsure. And I mean, they're hiring, you know, developers, they have like job openings on their websites. And I mean, if this is an FBI operation, I mean, they have really come a long way since Anom. I mean, props, because this looks semi-legitimate. It's just a little too good to be true. So anyways, I don't know. I'm just, I want us to be cautiously optimistic about the future, but at the same time, not that optimistic into jumping into these things without knowing exactly what they are. So, yeah, this is on my radar. What else is on my radar? NimVPN is on my radar. Now, I mentioned a little earlier that the Hated One YouTuber, friend of mine, did an interview with them. I want to play the 1 minute sales pitch, and this is coming from, oh, it's the same guy that the Hated One interviewed. I can't remember his name because I am forgetful. But we're going to play the video. Harry Halpin. Harry Halpin. So Harry Halpin, the CEO for NimVPN. And this is the one that's like just kind of popped up with all this funding. Chelsea Manning's part of it. I mean, maybe it's legit. And it's using a mixed net technology, which is essentially trying to obscure your traffic source. So it's kind of like a VPN, but rather than trusting one centralized server, it gets split up and it gets distributed. The requests get distributed with other nodes, which you can be a node operator too. And they have this whole Bitcoin thing baked into it and stuff like that, which, you know, whatever. But then they add noise to the traffic, and it's supposed to be some, you know, it's a little slow, kind of like Tor. It's like Tor on the clear net, but instead of three circuits, there could be, I think, like five or something like that. So let's give a listen for the video for NIM is more than a VPN.
1/8 of all humans on the internet have tried to use a VPN or use the VPN. They don't really offer real privacy.
We thought it would be necessary at this point to up our privacy and security technologies and build a new kind of network, which is decentralized, more than a VPN.
lot of buzzwords. Everyone always says decentralized. And this is starting to become a trigger word for me. I'm just throwing it out there.
We mix packets up. So packets that come into the server do not come out in the same order they came in. That provides a much higher amount of privacy than a standard VPN. We add noise to your traffic. So machine learning works by detecting signal, your traffic patterns inside your internet connection. By adding noise to those traffic patterns, we essentially scramble those patterns. The more people that use the system, the more private everyone is. And I think that's pretty amazing. No other system works like that.
Yeah, so, what they're talking about, I mean, it sounds good. It sounds good. I'm trying to want to be enthusiastic about a lot of these projects and services that are coming to be. And, you know, this is also, I had mentioned in the beginning, the rundown, Mulvad VPN is also doing, like, adding noise. Their DAITA, this was just announced March 28th, so just a couple days ago. Version 2 is now available on all platforms. So it says, they say, we are now releasing version 2 of our defense against AI-guided traffic analysis. That's what DAITA or data is the acronym for. So data version 2 brings two major improvements, a large reduction in traffic overhead and dynamic configurations that vary VPN tunnel characteristics between connections, making it harder for attackers targeting data. Probably referring more to, like, if you're being targeted and someone's like trying to monitor your traffic, or your ISP is monitoring your traffic. So the traffic overhead reduction uses two types of cover traffic, is like what they call it, that add significant overhead to the connection. The first one is constant packet sizes, where data is padding all packets to the same size to erase patterns that would otherwise exist. The second one is the addition of dummy packets to distort network patterns further. The second defense has now been more finely tuned in data version 2. By more carefully inserting these dummy packets, we use about half the amount of these packets while still maintaining the same level of defense. As a customer using data, the immediate benefit is improved speed. And I did notice, because I tried data, I think a few other people, I can't remember off the top of my head who mentioned that they tried it out and then ended up turning it off because it was really slowing down their connection. And I was experiencing the same thing with the data feature turned on. So they also have dynamic configurations. So you can have like version 1 where all VPN connections use the same set of rules governing the insertion of dummy packets from the VPN client. It says it makes it easier for the attacker with sufficient resources and determination to create tailored attacks for circumventing data. So when a user activates data version 2, Mulvad servers randomly select and assign a dynamic configuration to the VPN connection. It says this configuration affects how both the client and the VPN server insert dummy packets. Two clients visiting the same web page will now produce different in-tunnel data streams, which carry through to the tunnel transport layer, resulting in VPN tunnels with unpredictable characteristics despite transporting the same data. Additionally, whenever the device recreates its VPN connection, a new configuration is selected from the thousands of possible configurations. So they're trying to do kind of like their own mixnet, sort of. I wouldn't call it mixnet, but their own adding noise to the signal processing. So it's true. A lot of probably most ISPs are looking to monetize their clients beyond just their monthly subscriptions. And so they're selling data. And another way that ISPs get this information and can see, because you might be saying, well, I mean, all my traffic is encrypted. Well, yeah, probably if you're like most websites are using HTTPS, you're right. The data is encrypted. But you're still doing domain name lookups. And by default, your router out of the box is using your internet service provider's DNS, which is basically the phone book, right? That says, I want to go to lego.com. Well, lego.com doesn't really exist as far as like an address. It just points to a server based on its DNS records. It points to, you know, possibly Cloudflare or something like that, but it ultimately is pointing to an A record, which is a server IP for the web server itself. Yes, it could be a cluster, it could be all these things, but essentially it's a phone book, it's a lookup, right? So now, even though your ISP can't see the data of what Lego.com looks like, right? Or if you're logging into your bank or something, but they did the lookup. They know that you're going to your bank site, when, what time, how long you were requesting packets. They have all this information. So that is really juicy data to sell, because, hey, advertisers would love this, right? So this is supposed to help with the machine learning or AI that's being implemented to do even deeper packet analysis on, like, what apps you're using and all, like, how often and what kind of data you're pulling from where. Again, can't really see the content. They can't see the content if it's encrypted, but they can see all this metadata around that. So there's these services that are coming out, like Data 2, version 2 by Mulvad. You have things like Portmaster by Safing.io, which was recently acquired or merged with iVPN, right? Then you've got NimVPN. They're kind of coming out with their own thing. What makes me nervous about NimVPN is the amount of funding and the roster behind it. The CEO, Harry Halpin, is very kind of like the front man. He's the hype man, and he's saying all the right buzzwords and all the keywords that really tickle my fancy, like I'm an anarchist and, you know, I'm a cypherpunk at heart. He's saying all the things that would make one of us go like, oh yeah, he's one of us, you know. But I'm like, okay, I'm not really sure. I'm not saying he's a liar. I'm not saying any of this is bad and don't use it. I mean, do whatever you want to do. I'm just be a little cautious, be a little suspect, do some homework, ask for some receipts, you know, and maybe test it out in systems that won't compromise you or make you vulnerable until we can get some more information about who these people are. Sorry, I sound very cynical on this podcast, and it's probably because I've been mulling over all of this stuff, listening to all these podcasts and stuff for the last couple of weeks while I've been traveling. And I've just kind of found myself in this space where I feel like everyone is out to get us, and we have to really be vigilant to protect ourselves. And there are different reasons that we're all in this, right? I think that some of us might just be trying to limit our exposure, our footprint, and become as invisible as we can. Some are just doing it because they hate big tech and they don't want to line the pockets of ultra billionaires who are doing fake philanthropy and really just selling us out on the back end. And some of us are in it for the tech and for the nerdiness. Some of us are in it because you have reasons. You've got reasons, and that's cool. We've all got reasons. I don't think that if you listen to my podcast, you're probably the type of person who's trying to be absolutely 100% anonymous. If you are, that is very hard to do. I know that that's ultimately kind of like what we're secretly all trying to attain, is to be being anonymous as possible. Very hard to do. And there's a big difference between trying to be invisible or anonymous and being private. And I heard a really good analogy about this the other day. And also, security plays a big role in this too. But we've mentioned this before. Privacy and security are not mutually exclusive. So privacy is closing the blinds to your front window and walking around, you know, naked or not or whatever, right? That's privacy. Are you secure? Well, I don't know. Is the front door open? Is it unlocked? Right? Is it fortified? If there was an attacker in your come blazing through the front door, do you have a way to defend yourself? Because then privacy is not really that big of a, doesn't really play a factor in this whatsoever. So you can have security and maybe not have a ton of privacy. You could be in a vault that's clear, right? So nothing can really get you, but you're exposed. Or you could also be very private and black out your curtains and your windows but maybe it's fairly easy to break in somewhere. Maybe you left a vulnerability exposed. So someone who's targeting you has a way to get to you. That would be things like, hey, you know, I use password managers. I have unique email aliases for every single login. I have a unique password for every single login. I use MFA, multi-factor authentication, everywhere I can. I'm using TOTP at a minimum. As a maximum, I might be using something like hardware keys, YubiKeys, passkeys, that kind of thing. So, you know, it depends on like what you're trying to achieve. Now, remember, the more secure you make yourself, the more inconvenient it is to utilize all the different services that you want to. For instance, how you set up your device, your phone, right? You have like one owner profile, everything lives there. Do you have 10 profiles? You have 5 profiles. Now you got to switch profiles if you just want to go log something. That's what I do. I'm like that guy. I have a profile set up for just health apps that have no access to anything else, so I can log my macros, bro. Yes, it's annoying. It's annoying. But and this is like what we do. And there's no right answer. There's no one way to do any of these things. There's just your way. And I don't want you to feel, if you listen to this and you go like, man, I don't consider myself that much of a privacy nerd like Simon does or some of the other people in the group chat because I use an iPhone. Not the case. Not the case at all. Or maybe I use Windows and an Android, stock Android phone. No. It's a mindset. Yes, you know, sometimes there are certain limitations in life that prohibit you from doing the things that the way you would want to. Maybe you can't compartmentalize out, you know, the way that you want. But it's a lot of it is about mindset and doing the things that you can do to make yourself a smaller or harder target. Then there's the, you know, it's like different stages, there's different levels to this. And some of us are more extreme than others, but doesn't really matter where you are and what you're trying to achieve, as long as you're just trying to make it more difficult for the corporate surveillance and the government overreach, the government apparatus that's always, you know, trying to peer into our lives. Obviously to catch the terrorists and the child abusers, of course. I mean, you know, so, you know, they need everything, right? Wrong. I don't buy into that. We're being fleeced big time. And, you know, with everything that's been going on just this year with the UK coming after Apple for advanced data protection for their end users, to France, kind of wanting to go down the same path, we now have this new potential concern with Switzerland kind of potentially changing some laws around, you know, the protections that, you know, that give a lot of protections to a lot of businesses that you know, go to Switzerland for those privacy protections. And I'm stalling because I can't find the damn URL. So give me one second. So secure encryption in online anonymity are now at risk in Switzerland. Here's what you need to know. This is a Tech Radar article that came out on March 26th, and it says Switzerland is considering amending its surveillance law to expand into new types of monitoring and data collection. The changes, which experts argue will put people's anonymity and secure encryption at risk, would widen the net of impacted service providers to virtual private networks, messaging apps, and social networks, having previously only impacted mobile networks and internet service providers. Consultations are now public and open until May 6, 2025. Speaking to Tech Radar, NIMVPN has explained how it's planning to fight against it alongside encrypted messaging app Threema and Proton, the provider behind one of the best VPNs and secure email services on the market. Authorities' arguments behind the need for accessing more data always the same. catching criminals, and improving security. Yet, according to NIMS co-founder and COO, Alexis Roussel, being forced to leave more data behind would achieve the opposite result. Quote, less anonymity online is not going to make things better, he told TechRadar. For example, enforcing identification of all these small services will eventually push to leaks, more data theft, and more attacks on people. The amendment claims to expand the number of service providers targeted to include so-called derived service providers. This categorization would aim to include any online service with a turnover of $100 million or more than 5,000 active users. Come back to that. As per the official announcement, three types of information and two types of monitoring are also being created as a result, or as a result of this revision. Put simply, the likes of NimVPN and ProtonVPN would be forced to modify how they handle their encryption technology and their privacy policies around securing the anonymity of the users. Considering the pushback against encryption backdoors, Switzerland seems to be taking a different approach. Yet, according to Roussel, this is more of a play on words. It's not about end-to-end encryption. They don't want to force you to reveal what's inside the communication itself, but they want to know where it goes, Roussel explains. They realize the value is not what is being said, but who you are talking to. Beyond encryption, the mandatory identification provision is what most concerns NIM and others in the Swiss privacy tech industry right now. Quote, the whole point of security and privacy is not being able to link the usage to the person, the most critical thing, Roussel told the TechRadar, and that's the CEO for NimVPN. It says, it's important to note that the current amendment is not subject to a parliamentary vote or public referendum under Swiss law. Nonetheless, a public consultation is now ongoing so everyone can partake. NIM confirmed to TechRadar that the team has already started to build a strategy to fight against with Proton and Threema, and they hope more people will follow suit. The plan focuses on showing the damage these changes will have for citizens, online security, and the wider Swiss tech industry. NIM is still small, but Proton and Threema are very prominent companies in Switzerland, said Roussel, pointing out how the Swiss Army itself is using the latter service exactly for its well-known high level of security. Quote, I think we have a good argument, and I think the best argument we have is to show them that they would lose in front of a tribunal. So this isn't like a scare thing, but this is very real. And over the next couple of months, it looks like they'll be consulting, opening up to consulting on how to relax some of the provisions to make these changes. What I found was weird is the disparagement between this range of a company with a turnover. I'm assuming, what is that turnover? Is that annual revenue? Is that total worth? Probably not annual revenue. It's probably just total worth of $100 million or more. It says, or more than 5,000 active users. That is odd. I don't see... Okay, and the reason why I say that's odd is... if you're in Switzerland and you're building a small community, let's say a podcast community, and you have a Switzerland-based server and maybe you've registered your business there, your domain there, I don't know. I could see where you could have over 5,000 people parting, 5,000 users, but clearly not worth over $100 million. Like, does that... do you understand what I'm saying? Like, how does that make sense? We could probably, if we really pushed for it, get 5,000 people registered on our Mastodon server. The distance between having 5,000 active users or a turnover of $100 million is weird. Because really, what they're saying is anything that's of relative decent size. So there's a lot of companies based out of Switzerland. I know, I'm pretty sure Session is. I think they've moved their operations to Switzerland from originally Australia. NIM, VPN, Proton, yes, Threema. There's a lot. I mean, Signal's based in US, but like there's a lot of Swiss-based protections that a lot of companies utilize for privacy and security reasons when building privacy tech. So I don't know. It's like the last bastion is now, last bastion of refuge for these businesses or nonprofits to be registered could potentially now also be under pressure to either A, create more transparency with metadata and lessen the encryption, which, you know, some of these things would be very hard to do. Because, you know, some of them are built in with Tor, and it's, you know, hard to track that, you know, who they're talking to when you don't even know where the second hop is. So I'll have all the links to this. I know this is kind of a, maybe not so depressing, but just more trying to exercise those critical thinking skills. When coming across a lot of these different news articles and technologies, as we try to figure out and decide and test different applications or software, because there's a lot of things changing. There's a lot of things changing right now with a lot of pushback from the Trump administration and Elon Musk, like against X, right? People wanting to leave X, people wanting to leave Facebook and Instagram because Zuckerberg's made this big, like, you know, like change. He's a dude bro, jiu-jitsu fighting dude bro, likes to go bear hunting and shit. People don't like the people behind the tech is kind of like my point. And I'm not trying to be political. It's just what's happening, right? And so we're seeing other platforms grow, like Blue Sky. Blue Sky's also, I read an article, they're starting their own image feed service, kind of like similar to Instagram. I think it's called Flashes or something like that. There's Pixel Fed, which is, you know, decentralized on using Mastodon, which you can host your own. That's kind of cool. I like these routes. I'm actually kind of tending to be less and less social online anyways. the only real places I actually am active, which is not super active, but active at all, is Mastodon and Noster. And those are pretty small by comparison to like, say, Blue Sky and X or something like that. I don't know. It's like a good thing, bad thing. I see a good thing in that, like, people are leaving these big platforms. Cool. Because I think they all suck anyways. They're just data hogs. But the part that sucks is, like, everyone wants to go start their own thing rather than gravitate towards a protocol that could just be benefit from getting improved upon. I don't know. I mean, you know, with talking about Blue Sky, versus Mastodon versus Noster, you know, so you have ActivityPub versus what is it, AT protocol that Blue Sky is doing. I mean, these are all cool. I mean, they're protocols at least, and you can build on those and you can do different things with it. So I guess we're moving in the right direction. It's just like I feel like we're very fragmented. And then in the open source world, things are getting very weird, just strange things going on within open source and fragmentation where, like, you know, some people will use Matrix, some people use Discord, some people use others. You know, it's just kind of all over the place. And maybe that's okay. Maybe that's okay. I'm just trying to observe, and I'm looking, you know, kind of looking down the road. What does it mean for where we come together and communicate? Like even us, we use primarily Matrix, and we probably, if we stay on Matrix, we'll set up our own Matrix server. I think that's ultimately where we would go. But we're also kind of like, well, if we were going to set up our own and host something, is it a good time to consider something else? Maybe XMPP or Rocket Chat or something like that, or just, you know, set up our own Matrix. I don't know. I don't know. Let me know. What's on your all's mind? I have actually, want to say I've gotten some really great emails over the last few weeks, some with a lot of deep thought. I've gotten some also interesting, weird ones, but I love hearing from you all. So if you don't want to join the chat or you don't want to be part of those things, that's totally cool. If you want to shoot me an email, just simon@closednetwork.io and tell me your thoughts or tell me what, you know, things that are going on or other perspectives. I really enjoy that. I don't know everything, guys. I'm, you know, I've said it many times before. I'm just a dude with a mic. And I have a passion for doing research. I have a passion for having conversations with people, bringing people together, doing research, but I'm not, you know, I don't have a crystal ball. I don't really know. And there's a lot of things that I probably do that, you know, I know people in the chat are like, ah, dude, I'd never do that. Or I'd do it this way. And that's fine. I just, you know, I don't always have all the answers. And that's kind of where I really like lean on other people and lean on other podcasters even, and listen to them and what are they doing? And just kind of get a pulse for things, like whether it's like what technology stack are you using, what workflow, what threat models, how do you determine your threat model, what operational security are you implementing when you're traveling abroad. You know, we talk about things like, you know, there are different ports that you might go through where they do will and can scan your phone. What do you do in that situation? You know, fortunately, if you're on Graphene OS, there are ways to kind of do that a little easier, or set up a duress password to protect yourself. We talk about things like, well, what if you had a, you know, encrypted thumb drive, and if you had to, you could just buy another phone and, you know, pull down your seed vault, or, you know, all these different things, right? I mean, it's like, yeah, they may sound extreme, but a lot of things that are happening today, right now, would have sounded extreme if we were talking about them 5 years ago. So, like, hey, did you know Apple's just going to, like, have this AI? If you told someone 5 years ago that there'd be an AI agent running on their phone, literally scanning everything they do, categorizing it, logging it, sending it back to the home, you'd be like, what are you, crazy? That sounds nuts. That sounds like spooky, like some 1984 shit. Well, it's here. It's now, and it's on everything. It's in macOS. It's in Windows. It's in iOS. It's in Android with Gemini. It's everywhere. It's in my damn Garmin Connect app. They want to sell it to me. It's $7 a month. I was watching a video. I think, who was it? It's a great YouTuber, does a lot of DIY build stuff, Raspberry Pi stuff and everything. He was talking about, he bought a new Bosch dishwasher. Those are nice dishwashers. My parents have a Bosch dishwasher. Those things clean like really, really well. Fantastic at dishwashing, right? Well, this YouTuber, he got apparently a newer one, and it wouldn't let him turn on the dishwasher to run a cycle until he downloaded an app and created an account for this IoT device and connected it to a network and initiated it. That's in shitification. No, you can't just buy something and use the thing. everything requires an app download, an account. Why? Why does the dishwasher have to be on the network? Why does the refrigerator, the fridge, your thermostat? We're kind of getting to that space where you go to someone's house, because we don't have like any assistants in our house, never have Alexas and all that bullshit, none of that stuff. So I'm always like kind of freaked out when I'm at someone's house and they say, I'm not going to say it, I don't want, you know, but they say, hey Alexa, whatever, okay, I said it, do this, turn on the music, or start the vacuum, and their little vacuum cleaner start. I'm like, what the hell is all this? Is all this stuff listening to you all the time? And it is. And to them, it's normal, right? Because it's like, it's death by Chinese water torture slowly over time. You just get used to being abused. Like people just keep installing this crap or just accepting it. Well, I bought this thing, but I got to connect it to the internet. I bought this TV. In order for it to work, I got to have connected to the internet. No, you shouldn't have to do that if you don't want to. If you want to get something, stream something over the internet, it should be because you set it up, not because it should have to do that in order for it to work, to function. That's kind of what I'm talking about with the, like, you know, whole shitification of all this stuff. And that, I think, is what's irritating more than anything else right now, is how much all this stuff is just products and services. You own less, you keep less, and now you're required even more to register accounts, connect everything to the network, reveal its location, reveal what it's doing, reveal devices around it. You know, this whole Apple, you know, Wi-Fi positioning system, great example. The Bosch dishwasher, great example. I'm sure you all have examples. And it's exhausting. It's tiring. So anyways, that's enough of me. Like, I promise I'm going to try to be more positive in the next episode. And it wasn't really at all meant to be negative or Debbie Downer, Doomsday, or anything like that. I think it's kind of just me vocalizing like all these different things that are happening, these different stories and technologies and changes and requests and AI. And it's like, as a privacy advocate, as a privacy kind of enthusiast, someone who's always going out of their way to try to reduce the exposure to my real identity to things. I'm not saying being invisible to my government or to my utility company, but though that's something, a goal I'm working on. I'm not quite there like the Watchman privacy, where I've got everything in an LLC hidden. I've got my residence based out of South Dakota and all that. Like, you know, all my cars are registered there. And, you know, yeah, that's a long-term goal for me. That is definitely like kind of where I want to be. And I actually have kind of a different version of that plan that I'm working on actively, which I don't know how much I'll talk about, to be completely honest, but I am working on my own way of shielding stuff like that. But that's kind of like, you know, I almost feel like where we're being driven to is like this like level of small moments of madness through the day. Yeah, so tell me your thoughts. Join the chat. Hit me with an email. Hit me on Noster or Mastodon. I'd love to hear from you. I want to once again say thank you to all the supporters of the show, all of people who make this possible. I really do feel like this is a group project, and I'm just kind of like the project leader, coordinator, and I'm just sending out the... I'm sending out the summary in audio format in this podcast. So thank you all. I really appreciate it. I hope you're all doing really well. I'm looking to have at least one or two more episodes this month. It's a bit busy, but I'm trying to play ketchup and mustard. So maybe within the next 10 to 12 days, I should have another one out. Don't hold me to it, but I'm going to try. Love you guys. Talk to you in the future. They can never keep me down, I'm going. And if I ever fail, just know I'll go again. I never quit, cause I know that every loss may lead to another win. I'm going up. I bet when I land, they gon' tell me it's luck again. See that I'm winning, it's harder to watch. I'm setting the stage, you should give me my prize. You ain't got no soul, you lacking the spirit. You talk out your neck, I'ma show you I'm with it. I've been really hoping you to sit and